Today on our show,
we're counting down the top 10 remakes with special guest Stu from the Stu World Order podcast.
Hit it, Polly. Welcome to episode 367 of the Countdown Podcast. Reservations recommended. My name is Wayne.
What?
I don't know. I'm just making shit up.
My name is Paul. Welcome to this podcast. We count down movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness, so you don't have to. Today's topic is a redux. We did it. What episode do you reckon it was, Wayne?
It's got to be single digits.
Nope.
No?
No.
15?
23.
Shit.
23. So some 344 weeks ago is the last time that we touched on this topic. So when we do these reduxes, we like to have a guest on.
Yes.
And today is no exception. So we've got Stu from the Stu World Order podcast. Stu, welcome to the countdown.
Sup, Stu?
Thanks for having me. How are you guys today?
Good, man.
Not too bad.
Sun is shining over here. What's the weather like where you are? Where are you? You're in, what's it, Pennsylvania? Was it?
Yep, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. It is
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
It is 11 o'clock at night. The weather is dark.
I forgot that there's a thing called time zones.
Literally the other side of the planet. Thank you for giving up your Friday night to join us, Stu. Can you tell listeners a bit about your show?
Yeah, we have the Stu World Order over there. Paul, you've been on an episode. How it works is we review random comic book movies. I have a list of about 115 movies right now. My guests come on, they give me three numbers. I tell them what they chose, and then they pick the one that they want to talk about, and that's what we do on the show.
Nice. That would be the shit.
What's the what's been the worst film you've had to do so far?
I did have to do Catwoman, which Ooh. I figured when I was making the list, that had to be like bottom two or three. And yeah, it got drawn and it was with Joe Dougherty. He's one of your followers on the Facebook community. Yep. Yeah, he did it. And he pulled Catwoman. He was like, you know what? Yeah, let's do Catwoman.
I like the way he chose to do that. The other two can't have been as bad as Catwoman,
no,
surely.
They were pretty bad.
Oh, okay.
It was like whatever you picked. You had no good choices.
Yeah. I did Sin City 2.
Well, see, you told me it was a bag of shit, so I never even saw it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I think Stu would agree. It's not the best film
in
the world.
Yeah, it's not great. It's not very good. The funny thing is, 2 weeks after doing Sin City 2 with you, I got to do the first Sin City, and I was like, oh, well, that was much better.
It was.
Did Frank Miller do number two?
Well, he's involved with it, but Robert Rodriguez still directed it.
Still a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah.
Well, anyway, if you see what Robert Rodriguez is now dedicating his life to.
Spy Kids 7?
Yep. Well, they're rebooting Spy Kids for Netflix.
Bloody hell. Okay.
Yeah. Sure. Anyway, what obviously makes him money, good on him. All right, well, everyone should go over and check out the Stu World Order. It's a great short listen, straight to the point. I love podcasts that don't spend 15 hours talking about one 90-minute film. But no disrespect to our good mates, the contrarians, who do it well. Apart from them, everyone else, come on, shorten it up. That's what we want to say. All right, well, let's get into the episode proper on the other side of the segment, which kicks it off every show. It's called The Recount.
Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount? Who wants a recount?
The Recount is our mail room. Paul, what happened this week?
Well, we had last week's vote, episode 366, the top 10 vampire films in celebration of the piece of shit that is Morbius.
Yep.
It was one-way traffic, I think it's fair to say, Wayne. First of all, for some reason, Facebook, even though I distinctly hit the buttons that say don't add poll options and you can only vote once, somehow ignores me half the time. And so coming in third place, we have Is Reap Actually a Vampire Film with 11 votes? That one was added by Chris Yeeney. Then we had you with second place, Wayne, 13 votes, almost beaten by Is Reap a Vampire Film?
Oh, wow.
And then I did triumph, 38 votes. So a bit of one-way fingering.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was. I think my problem, Paul, was omitting that Kiwi film that you like and everyone else.
What We Do in the Shadows, Brianna Petty said, Paul had From Dusk Till Dawn higher, and he didn't downplay the awesomeness of What We Do in the Shadows.
Okay, that's a fan.
Well, Troy Spitter, who does us the solid every week by putting the actual lists out there for everyone to read, says, me trying to figure out how to keep my Wayne Voting Block membership after having to vote for Paul 2 weeks in a row.
Hey, that's fine.
That gif of all the equations going across that woman's face. Very, very good. Legend, you just said, Joe Doherty said, Paul wins for not having Van Helsing. That's the other thing that worked against you, Wayne.
I actually knew it would, and I knew this one was going to go this way, But I'm so fine with it.
That's it. Catherine Guard said, Wayne for Interview with the Empire and the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen acknowledgement.
There, one other person on the planet who likes that movie.
Well, Luke James Human said over on Twitter, if Wayne doesn't have League of Extraordinary Gentlemen in his list, I am unsubscribing from the show. So you cost us a listener, Wayne.
Sorry about that, man. I hope you're still here.
Good work. So yeah, in the end, I think that makes it maybe your one ahead on the year, but I've kind of lost track. I have to go back and listen.
Okay.
But hooray. Thank you for everyone for voting. And Stu, I think your vote was Paul Wynn's having Fright Night higher. So yep. Thank you.
Fair enough.
There we are. One other moment of reflection from Twitter. This one comes from Movie Mosh Pit. The only thing I remember about Interview with the Vampire is banging a pregnant stripper after the movie.
What?
Odd Night.
Ironically, I chose that film because I had this wonderful like moment with a girl where she held my hand. That's what I remember. That's why I like that film. But he's slamming pregnant prossies. Fucking hell. All right.
I thought you would be interested in that one. So I thought it was worth reading on the show.
Apparently he had a better night that night.
One review this week, which we want to shout out here. This comes from @manBBK over in Great Britain. NSFW, but wonderful, 5 stars. I've listened to this show for years. Today I had a moment when my kids walked in while I listened. Uh-oh. Paul and Wayne are wonderful, but they're not PG. Apple Podcasts crashed as I went to turn off the show, leaving my children to learn several new words as Wayne and Paul went on a typical X-rated rant.
Oh dear, I'm so sorry.
With that said, the podcast is brilliant. I love listening and Wayne and Paul get together so well. Wayne repeatedly requests I consume his rectum, but I still love the show.
That's Paul's soundboard, everyone.
Nope, it's Wayne. Maybe that's why I love the show. Do I need to check myself? They're brilliant at movie reviews and the countdown episodes are always great fun. I love this podcast. Thank you so much for that.
Oh, very kind. Very. Sorry about the kid, man.
Yes, we do apologize for that one. It does say NSFW or whatever, 18 plus on Apple.
Sure.
So we do what we can. But no promises how it's going to go this week. Stu has promised that his list is divisive.
Oh, good.
/
I do those too.
Going to cause consternation. So
excellent.
Prepare yourselves, ladies and gentlemen.
That's how you do a show, everyone.
On the other side of this live stream for the Cure promotion, which is coming up in 6 short weeks, you'll hear these lists.
Hello, everyone. My name is Nick. I'm the host of Nikolai's Kitchen, and I'm also the host of the annual Live Stream for the Cure. Live Stream for the Cure is a charity event where we raise money with content creators and podcast partners from around the world for the Cancer Research Institute, a wonderful nonprofit researching cancer immunotherapy, training the body's immune system to fight all forms of cancer. This is a mission and a future that I truly believe in. And myself and my team worked tirelessly over the past 5 years to raise over $50,000 for this cause. This year, we're aiming for our biggest single goal to date of $20,000, and we cannot do it without your help. Please join us for the event May 19th through the 21st, starting at 9 a.m. Eastern, for 45 hours of content from people all over the world. Together, we can bring hope for a future immune to cancer. The more eyes we reach, the more dollars we raise. Please help us in making this goal a reality. Together, we can make a difference.
The Top 10 Remakes, y'all.
Is the subject of this week's countdown, despite the awkward little pause there while I had to lean back from the mixer.
New setup in the office when you have a guest. It's lovely. It's lovely.
Stu, how'd you go about this list? What was, obviously it's straightforward, has to be a remake, but you have implied that this was not straightforward.
No, I didn't think this was because I did a draft. I used to do a lot of drafts on my website and I would invite other podcasters on and we would do a draft. And people in that draft for drafting remakes were drafting like Batman Begins and Spider-Man Homecoming. Ooh. And I was
See? Hey! See how annoying that is.
Those are remakes.
I don't think so, but I guess we'll see
Reboots
if anyone's put them on.
Reboots are not the same as remakes is the only thing. So for example, I could have picked Sherlock Holmes because I love that film. It's not really a remake, though, is it? It's not a remake.
This might be one of my lists, then, that you're going to be annoyed at. But all right, we didn't talk about the premise because we thought this would be fun.
We play jazz. That's okay, baby. That's right.
All right. Shall we, then, lead off with our guest, Stu? What is your number 10 best ever remake?
My number 10, one of the few horror movies that ever terrified me as an adult, is the remake of Ringu, The Ring.
Yes. Nice choice. Very nice.
I've seen that one.
I saw this, like, at a midnight showing, and I went home, and for whatever reason, like, for a week and a half, just terrified all the time. I was like, goddamn girl's gonna crawl out of my TV. I can't stand this shit. I can't sleep. And I want to let you in on a secret here. This is how I got past this. I was laying in bed one night, and I was looking at my TV, and I was legitimately like, I can't stop thinking about that movie. And I thought, here, there is every bit as much chance that girl is going to crawl out of my TV and kill me as there is that I will spontaneously develop heat vision and defeat her. And it just created this neural pathway, and my brain was like, all right, now I can
see. I'm okay with this now.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of neural pathways, this means you clearly have a TV in your bedroom, yes?
I did when I was in college, yeah. This movie came out a while ago.
Oh, and do you now? Does anyone else
know? No TV in the bedroom now. The wife wouldn't stand for it.
Shit, I put a 40 on the goddamn wall, all right? That's like, and I've had a lot of people say, you can't have a TV in your bedroom. I'm like, bullshit. But okay, I understand.
If you sleep fine, then that's fine. If you don't sleep fine, I'd take the TV out of your bedroom.
Yeah, I'm pretty big.
Blue light.
Oh, is that what that is? I see. But it's still so cool to watch TV in bed, man. What's up? Anyway. All right. Sorry, please.
How else are you going to jerk one off in comfort?
Exactly. Thank God Apple TV's here. All right, so.
All right, yeah, great. That was on my list back in episode 23. I did chop it off this time for some other sort of, to be a bit variable. So, but I 100% agree. So much better than the original Japanese film as well. They really, Gore Verbinski directed that one and just punched it up in the right ways. It's much more entertaining. It's much faster paced. And Naomi Watts is a good lead. So
Did they film her walking backwards to make it look weird, that kind of thing? I think I read that somewhere. That's why it looks so weird when she's walking out of the TV because it's like run backwards. Anyway, I heard.
One of the best end frights, I reckon, ever in a film. The original. And then, of course, they redo it for this one too. So
what happened at the end?
She comes out of the TV. And that's how you see finally how she kills people.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. See, I've forgotten everything about it, but I remember
being
scared.
Scares them to death.
Yeah.
And almost scared Stu to death too.
And it followed that little kid, and he delivers that line like, you weren't supposed to help her. And I just lost it in theaters at that. I was like, oh, shit, no! Creepy kid, God damn it.
How dare you? All right, nice one.
You go ahead, Paul.
Want me to go next? Yeah. All right, my number 10 is one that I've shopped on because it came out since we last did this countdown. I'm talking It Part 1.
Ah, shit.
The ant. What?
Yeah, that's right. It's fine.
Wasn't shit. You enjoyed that film. If I'm not mistaken, it may even have crept on your top 10 films of that year.
Yeah, it's actually a really well-made movie that I'll never see again.
No, I don't expect you to.
Andy Wayne Muschietti just wanted another chance to swear. He'll never pass that up.
That is correct. Everyone who's seen this film knows that it was very well received. Made a shit ton of money. For a while, there was the highest grossing horror film of all time. It did so well. The first part did. Second part didn't do as well and is nowhere near as good a film. But this one, I really, really enjoyed. Stephen King's obviously seminal doorstop of a novel, which features this creature which haunts Derry, Maine, and kills kids when it can.
You know what's fucked up about this? You know what's fucked up about this? That scene in the bathroom where he's chasing her and she ends up in the thing or whatever, and she's being chased by the bad, like the abusive whatever is, right? He's about to hurt her, and you're thinking, oh, Pennywise will fuck up that bad guy. But he didn't. She saved herself. And then Pennywise went to fuck her up. And this is like the worst, most harsh-ass fucking shit ever, man. I'm like, damn. So anyway, yes.
You don't even get that feel-good moment where Pennywise gets the bad guy, like you said.
Exactly! Like you don't get it, they don't give it to you. Sons of bitches! Anyway. Good choice, though, Paul.
Thank you. Yeah, I enjoy this one. So, and hopefully others did too. Stu, fan, not a fan?
You may find out in a few minutes.
Oh, okay. Well, there we go.
Excellent.
All right, back to you then, sir. Over to you, Wayne.
Word.
For your number 10.
Okay.
Which I've just looked over your shoulder and seen an old.
Oh,
my
yeah. See,
God.
Now Paul can read my notes and this is fucked. Oh, I'm turning this shit over here, motherfucker.
Turn shit away.
Turn away. All right. So listen, as a complete change of pace, because that's what I do. Bitch, please. The Nutty Professor, y'all. The Nutty Professor. Word to Big Bird. This is a 1996 film about. But actually, here's the thing. I was a fan of the original Jerry Lewis Nutty Professor. I used to watch that as a kid. Very funny.
All right.
All that, right? Then I hear, now remember, at the time, Eddie Murphy is not doing well, career-wise. Like, he's not had a hit since fucking whatever, right? And it's like, yo, Eddie Murphy did The Nutty Professor. I'm like, get the fuck out. He's going to root that up. I fucking hate it. I hate watched it, right? Hilarious. Hilarious.
Turned you on a dime.
Exactly. Instead of, like, in the original Nutty Professor, Jerry Lewis was a nerdy guy, and then he drinks his potion, and he's a scientist, and he becomes Buddy Love, and he's all cool and shit with a smoking jacket. In this one, they've made the bad thing.
Just throwing my shit around. I'm so annoyed.
Just threw some shit around. They made it that he's fat instead of nerdy, okay? So this is about Eddie Murphy being in a fat suit and he's doing all this shit. And, like, you know, it's like, it is so hilariously funny. There's the fart joke scene. Has everyone seen the fart joke scene? That was novel in the mid-90s, okay? That was like, oh my God, they made a whole scene about farting. Yes,
all of your arguments are like my asshole, man.
Dick. Paul, suck my dick. All right? This is the shit. I even thought Jada Pinkett Smith had hair in this. It was like,
you get your name, her name out of your mouth.
Motherfucking mouth, yeah. So, yes, I've always adored this film, and it was a pleasant surprise. Surely there's some other fans out there, if certainly not in this room.
Well, we don't know, Stu. Are you a fan of the Nutty Professor remake?
I haven't seen it since it came out. And you know what? When I think of the Nutty Professor, I can't think of anything about that movie. All I remember is, like, it had a sequel called The Clumps, and the cover was just, like, Eddie Murphy in all the different fat suits. I don't think I ever saw that one. I just remember the cover, and it has subjugated everything I could possibly think about in terms of the Nutty Professor.
I kind of recommend it, I gotta tell you. I mean, there's even a Dave Chappelle bit in there where he's doing stand-up. It's pretty good.
One guy talking.
Fits together perfectly. Nutty Professor, Dave Chappelle, stand-up.
Hell yeah.
All right, well, there we are. The introduction, we're away. Maybe these choices so far reflective of lists. What's your number 9 then, Stu?
My number 9 is a remake of a 1978 Franco-Italian film that I will not try to pronounce because it will just embarrass me. It is the Robin Williams, Nathan Lane vehicle, The Birdcage.
Good call. That's a good-ass movie.
I have no idea Nathan Lane was not even nominated for an Oscar for this role, and that is bullshit. Nathan Lane should still be winning Oscars for this goddamn movie. Like, dude, every year they should just be like, give it to him again. Fuck it.
The Nathan Lane great. Commemorative award.
You know, that bit where he's like, I can play it straight for a while, you know, and then he goes and becomes straight on purpose.
Uh-huh.
Shit, that was good. That was pure class, the writing in that. I'm like, damn.
The part if where I've he's seen doing,
this film, I've only watched it once.
The part where he's doing the John Wayne walk, and he says to Robin Williams, was that good? And Robin Williams says, I never realized John Wayne walked like that.
It's, you know, it's a good show. It's a good
it's
film.
It's a hilarious movie, and... I usually love Diane Wiest, but it kind of makes her a jerk for like 99% of the movie. Like, she's usually the good voice of reason character in movies, and in this one, she's not till the very end.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is class.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Good choice.
All right. If I've seen it, I can't remember it.
I wouldn't really give it. It was not your film. It's not
my kind of
film.
Fair enough. Which probably explains why I can't remember
That's
it. But good. Great. Some variation. Speaking of variation, my number 9 is a Western.
Oh.
It's The Magnificent Seven.
Oh, fuck, it sucked my dick, man.
The 1960 version.
What? Oh, original?
Yeah.
All right.
No, well, not the original. The remake Seven Samurai.
Not the fucking, what's his name?
Antoine
Foucault. And that one was sucking big hairy balls.
I like that one too, but not as much as this one.
Yeah, I thought you were doing that just to piss me off, you fucking fuck.
Well, I presented it that way to piss you off.
I see where this goes.
The 1960 version, directed by John Sturges, and star, of course, Yul Brynner, Charles Bronson, and a whole host of other name actors at the time. Small group of guys come together to protect a village from outlaws.
Got to be better than
the army of outlaws. And I know it's pretty much pound for pound Seven Samurai, but done in a Western setting. And how brilliant to go, well, let's just change the genre in effect.
I think I remember seeing this one as a kid as well. Like, it's just cool to have, like, gunfighters as bodyguards and the Westerns are cool. It's good shit. Have you seen it, Stu?
I have not. I've had Seven Samurai itself on my playlist for a long time, but it's like 3 years long, so I just don't sit and watch it.
It is.
I've never seen Magnificent Seven, though.
I think that one's much more palatable. This one's way shorter, too. If Seven Samurai is 3 hours, this one's just over 2 hours.
Okay.
So
don't see the new one, even though that's shorter.
No, that's
again.
Great, too. Also great, but not as great as this one. Absolutely. 1960s Magnificent Seven, the oldest film on my list. Coming here at number 9.
Okay. Well, my number 9 is a film called The Thomas Crown Affair.
Of course it is.
Okay, because Pierce Brosnan, Rene Russo, and it's about this bored billionaire, Thomas Crown, and he decides to entertain himself by stealing a Monet from a reputed museum, and then Rene Russo is this, like, insurance investigator chick who dresses really well, and she she takes...
Very important for Wayne.
It's a big part of the character. She was the first one I saw on... You know how people have those green slushy drinks of vegetable puree in the morning?
Mm.
I'd never seen that done before. She was the first one who did it, and it on purpose looked disgusting, but she looked amazing, so it's like, oh, that must be good for her. And titty bonus. Like, you see, and this is the thing, right? You got, like...
Thrill me.
We've loved Rene Russo for many years, I think it's fair to say, Paul.
Yeah.
Okay, and then, like, you know, on this movie, she gets out her, like, mid-40s titties, right? And I'm mid-40s, but back then, I was, like, 25, and I was still all about it, man. I was all about it. So, it was, and also, it's a really great film and very stylish. Sting sang the lead song, you know? So, that's cool.
Oh,
so,
yeah,
let's recap Wayne's number 9 choice. Thomas Crown Affair, Pierce Brosnan, Rene Russo's breasts.
Right.
It's also a good film. Right, gotcha.
All of these things made it a good film, Paul.
And she dresses well.
Exactly. Sorry, she dresses well.
Seriously, the wardrobe still holds up, man. It holds up.
You've obviously not seen that one, Stu.
No, I'm not even sure I've heard of that, to be honest.
Oh, you got to check it out, son.
That one just missed me, I guess.
Steve McQueen in the original?
Yeah, the original Steve McQueen's 1968 one, but this is, for its time, you'd like it. I don't know, maybe you would, maybe you won't. It's a little bit thrillery.
Okay, thrillers are good.
All right, over to you, number eight.
My number eight is where I have It Chapter One.
What?
The original TV miniseries is it is really good, but I remember watching it and I don't remember anything about the kid stuff in the miniseries. I just remember like John Ritter and Night Court Judge. I don't remember the kid stuff. And then when they made this remake, the kid stuff is the best part because you get to the sequel and it's no good.
Yep.
It's not good, but yeah.
It's a letdown after the first one.
Yeah, I mean, the kid actors are brilliant in it. The scares are much better. It just has a better atmosphere about it.
I take it there was no scene where the kids all, like, did it?
There was not. In the book. In either version of the movies, do they have
good, because
the weird...
you cannot film that scene.
No.
Wise excision from that particular part of the novel. Nice. Obviously, we are 100% on the same page. I'm going to continue the horror theme with my number eight, and also the Steve McQueen theme, who seems to be popping up in just about everything at the moment. A remake of Steve McQueen starring The Blob in 1988. That's my choice.
Oh, The Blob, right,
the Blob.
Okay.
Yes, the version where they now make it rather than this sort of, well, you think it's an alien thing, turns out to be a government-created sort of mutation that got out of the lab and is now running rampant through this town.
Is it a blob, Paul? I haven't seen it. Is it a blob, like a big blobby
like
ass?
A big purple thing which, you know, starts small, like slime. Imagine like, you know, the slime shit? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it grows bigger and if it touches you, it just eats straight through you, kind of like acid.
Wow, and it's called The Blob and it's an actual horror.
Yeah.
Yep.
Huh.
And it's got some of the best practical effects you shall ever damn well see. Stu, fan, not a fan?
Yeah, I saw it like when I was a kid and not since then, but I liked it whenever I saw it. It's one of those movies I keep meaning to revisit and just haven't had a reason to.
There's a great cautionary tale for you, Wayne.
No, go on.
In this particular, so there's a guy who's driven a girl to a makeout spot.
I don't know what the fuck this is about, but all right, fine.
And he's all getting hot and heavy and she's like, she's had... Yeah, maybe a drink or two too many. Not saying that you would do that part.
No, thank you.
Yeah, just to be clear. But anyway, he's decided to unbutton her top. And meanwhile, the blob has sort of crept into the car on the other side and has gone into her body.
Oh, no.
And effectively, when he puts his hand down her top to get a copper feel, her chest collapses and his hand goes in and starts
eating
horrible.
Him. Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah, and she literally gets sort of sucked in. And here's a little graphic from that moment.
Yuck. You're a sick motherfucker, Paul.
Stars Kevin Dillon, Johnny Drama.
Oh, Johnny Drama's in it.
In a pretty, he's the main. He's the lead. He's the bad boy of the town. And Shawnee Smith is the female lead.
Shawnee Smith.
The chick from Becker.
Oh, I love her.
Yeah, there you go.
So maybe you should check it out. Becker?
Yeah.
She's also one of the Saw movies?
Yeah, Second Saw.
Oh,
and
okay.
Subsequently, yeah. Yep.
Oh, I'm quite a fan of hers.
There you go. That's right. My number eight.
There you are, man. My number eight is completely expected. Ocean's 11.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah,
surprised it's so low, to be honest.
This became so cool for me because, okay, so I love George Clu and all of this Matt Damon, Brad Pitt. Yeah, sure, absolutely. All of that stuff. Let's just say, okay, cool. Steven Soderbergh makes it all sweet looking and with the, like, they talked about it being actually almost like a passion project for all of them because they thought it'd be fun to hang out together. That feels like it in the film. And
Adam Sandler should take note.
Yes, he should.
If you're going to just get your friends together for a fucking holiday, make a good film while you're doing it.
Yes, because you can do that. And this is fortunately on the cusp of Steven Soderbergh's good films. Because then he made a bad one after this. Then another good
Ocean's
one. 12. Then a bad one. Exactly. So, but the actual original. I liked it so much I went to go see the original. Oh my God. The original with Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack, okay, is literally just excuses for them to sing, right?
Oh my God, sounds like the worst film of all time.
Apparently, it's really common that Frank Sinatra would, because he was on the Rat Pack and he's doing Vegas shows and this sort of stuff, then they'd shoot the movie, you know, in his spare time. He would turn up like 4 hours late or on set every day, and the director would say to him like, hey Frank, listen, so we're, you know, 16 pages behind on shooting, so we're going to have to do extra time. Frank Sinatra walks over to the script, and rips out 16 pages and goes, we're caught up. And that's why all of those movies are incomprehensible.
Right.
Because they just had to shoot around and go, what the fuck are we going to do now? Because you don't know what's going on. It's really, really bad, but they made this really, really good
back
film.
Back when the stars had, well, at least Frank Sinatra had more power than
he had mafia connections. Mafia as well. Fuck everyone up.
I was going to say, yeah, you do what old Blue Eyes wants you to do.
He'll fuck you up. Exactly. So, yeah.
We'll just have Dean sing a bit here. Okay.
It's not even, it's like, It is literally that. It's like they're in an apartment. What are we going to do now? What are we going to do about the house?
We're going to win this race.
Yeah, we're going to win this race. That's Elvis. But yeah, you know. Lemonade. All right. So
it's a good pick. It was my last cut from my list. It was tough getting rid of Ocean's 11, but I really like it. That is a good movie. It's just, you watch that movie and it makes you feel cooler. Like, yeah, I'm suave too. No, I'm not.
Exactly. And ironically, when you go to Vegas and hang out in those, everyone looks like a bag of dicks, man. No one fucking dresses up for casinos anymore. So, you know, there you go.
There we are. All right. Stu, number 7.
All right, so number 7, last week when you guys did your vampire list, I said that Paul won because he had Fright Night higher, and at number 7 I have the remake of Fright Night, an equally excellent movie. And I think what the difference is for them is, with the first Fright Night, you've got Roddy McDowall and Chris Sarandon giving great performances that overshadow everyone else in the movie. And I think in the remake, everybody is strong. You've got Toni Collette, you've got David Tennant, you've got Colin Farrell, you've got McLovin. Everybody in the remake is so good.
Antoine Yelchin.
Yeah. I just McLovin love it.
Did it?
Wayne's on board.
McLovin!
McLovin is in it. McLovin turns into an evil vampire.
He's evil. The guy, oh shit. Yep. Look, you know, is it actually scary though? I think that's why you all like it, right? It's scary as opposed to the
It's entertaining. I describe the first Fright Night as horny. I describe the second Fright Night as, or the remake as sexy. Like, it's a little less clumsy about it. But, oh man, there's a scene with Colin Farrell and the lead actor's girlfriend in a dance club, and it was like, all right, movie, I'm ready to go now. Okay.
Really?
I think Wayne would be here for that.
If you are ready to go, Wayne's already been.
All right, I'm going to, I may in fact watch this just for fun.
Check it out. I really like it.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, some of the listeners really get behind that one too. So
interesting. Yeah.
Very nice, very nice. My number 7 is, here's where I might caught some controversy, and I know this one has caught us out before, but you know what? It is a reboot, but it's also a remake of a previous version of this film. It's James Bond, Casino Royale.
That's totally valid.
Okay,
The original.
I have no qualms with this.
Yeah. By the way.
Good. Sure. The way you were talking there, I thought, well, maybe you've shopped it off your list.
No. This was, like, if you said, like, Her Majesty's Secret Service, no, because that's a continuation of another thing. But Casino Royale was made with David Niven.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So this is totally a remake. Okay, good, totally good. Remake.
Yeah, look, you really probably brought me around on this. I liked the movie when I first watched it, but re-watching it for the show, I think for the patrons, we reviewed it however many years ago. This is stellar Bond, and the best Bond film, to my mind, that's ever been made.
To me too, and especially, I think it's the best spy thriller ever made.
I have other things.
Really?
Yeah.
Are we doing that show one day?
Well, that was episode 1, so we can redux that one too.
Do that one too, okay.
But yeah, obviously Daniel Craig and more gritty, down to earth. Let's get rid of surfing fucking tidal waves and being dickish about this. Let's not have Christmas fucking January, Christmas, whatever her name was.
Denise Richards.
Let's Dr. make Christmas it a Jones. Little bit more grounded, a little bit more realistic. No, a lot more realistic.
A lot more, man. This became completely the other way. Yep. And that's why it was cool. The broccoli
Absolutely.
People, they knew. Because I talked about this before, but like, did movies go dark before that? You could argue Batman and this and that, but like in terms of a James Bond spy thriller franchise, they were always tongue-in-cheek because they're trying to be
effect,
James
man.
Bond.
Pendulum effect. You swing so far the other way, eventually you need to not just come back to the middle, you got to go further the other way to even it all out.
But to have it work so well, usually when you pull genres on someone, on an entire audience like that, they're like, ooh, I don't know. But everyone loved this. Plus everyone was shitting on Daniel Craig. I know this
What
girl,
an odd choice. He's not handsome enough. He doesn't look good enough.
What a bunch
Didn't
of
they
crap.
Hate him because he was blonde?
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know memory. What? In Fleming's books, Bond had sandy colored hair, not even black colored hair. We're just used to Pierce Brosnan. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And so, Timothy Dalton and Timothy Sean Connery exactly. and Roger Moore. And yeah.
Well, Roger Moore's a little sandy, but you know, yeah, I know what you mean. So, yeah, it was cool, man. That's why we loved it so much, because we weren't expecting to. So, you know.
Right from that opening scene, you know, chase through the construction.
That opening scene is the shit.
Damn.
I showed it to someone who doesn't like James Bond films, and she was like, begrudgingly, fuck, that was good.
Set the tone. For the subsequent films that we got, which have finally just wrapped up however many years later, I guess 15 years
later. Amazingly wrapped up, I should add.
So yeah, it's all right.
There you go. It's definitely my favorite James Bond. So
there we are. We're all in agreement in this particular chat.
But is Daniel Craig your favorite James Bond?
You know what? In my brain, Pierce Brosnan has always been what James Bond should look like.
He's the best all-round Bond.
Yeah, like I just kind of, that's what I think the guy should look like, just handsome and debonair.
I get that. Yeah.
But I'm enjoying his rough, rugged, fuck you guy.
Oh, yeah.
Man. I'm like, this guy.
As the character, great.
If you have to fight Pierce Brosnan or Daniel Craig, I'm definitely picking Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
I'll fucking So there you go.
Yeah. Probably, yeah, but you have probably even more chance against Pierce Brosnan than you would Steven Seagal.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Cannot run Pierce. All right. So my number seven is probably going to be another one of those ones where people go, God damn, Aruzu, what the hell's wrong with you and your life?
Oh, in that case, let me ready the soundboard.
Or, you know, I could just launch right in. It's The Italian Job.
Oh, yeah. I knew this was coming.
I love this show, man! Everyone, The Italian Job is a remake of the Michael Caine one back in the whenever it was. 60-something? I want to say
I don't
60s.
Know.
I don't know, motherfucker.
Not my fucking list.
Suck my dick, man. But this one has got Morris Minor in it, which is a big thing for the first one. But more importantly...
And the Majors?
No. This is the chorus, Paul. I don't know anyone out there who would get that joke. All right.
Didn't even go no sleep till Brooklyn. Till bedtime, sorry.
Yeah, I know. Okay, anyway, sorry. Well,
Stu's smiling politely. What are you talking about?
Like the rest of the audience, never mind.
Too just letting you have fun.
Yeah, you guys, your show. If you want to fuck it up, it's your call. This film is after, what happens is Marky Mark and Edward Norton are all in this crew along with Donald Sutherland, and they're, doing this heist in Venice.
Who was in again?
Donald Sutherland.
No, who are the others?
Marky Mark.
What? No.
Fuck you. Can't believe I walked right into that one. And of course, there's a hot woman in it, Charlize Theron, who drives a Mini. And it involves them trying to steal back gold that was stolen from them using three Minis, which is impossible. It's enough gold to fill fucking a massive, massive safe. However, the cool thing about the film is everything. It's all cool. It's actually fun to watch. Donald Sutherland is cool. Marky Mark is even cool in this. I know Paul's a big fan.
What? No.
Yeah, I know. I think Marky Mark's a good leading man. He's just, sometimes questionable choices, but he's done well in the past. And this one, although apparently Ed Norton only did this movie because he had to fulfill his contract and he was pissed off about it and he started being an asshole on set, which is apparently a thing he does.
Edward Norton.
But yeah. they still made an amazing movie. This is F. Gary Gray.
No, they didn't.
Come on. You don't like this movie? This was the shit, man.
They made a movie.
So no one else likes this film.
Again, I think one or two people mentioned it in the feedback.
Well they should. It's a great-ass film, man. Pure fun. Pure fun. Absolutely, doesn't require much of you, and that's what I'm all about.
That's what you're exactly. Wayne's all up in that shit. All right. Stu, we're over to you. Number six.
My number six is the film that finally won Martin Scorsese an Oscar, The Departed, a remake of Infernal Affairs.
How do I put this one?
We'll do it together. 3, 2, 1.
Low.
That is fair. I completely understand that. I don't think that's the first or the last time you're going to say that to me during the show, but I saw this in theaters. I loved it. It's honestly my favorite Scorsese movie, too. So, I mean, I know everyone likes Goodfellas and yep. Taxi Driver.
I'm on that train with you, bro. I'm on that train.
This is a really great movie. You got Jack Nicholson. Wow. He became that whole meme of him grinning and nodding. That's great. Any movie that gives us that, fantastic movie. And just performances all around. Marky Mark is back.
What? What did I just say? He's doing great.
He's actual good work.
Yeah. He's the best, man. He's
Oscar nominated Marky Mark for this movie.
Exactly,
Academy
right?
Award nominee, Mark Wahlberg.
Did they actually get him a nom?
What? Yep. No.
I'm surprised, man, because that scene where he's who are you? I'm the guy who does his job. You must be the other guy. Shit like that. I'm this is good writing, man.
That was an intimidating fella.
Oh, yes. Big fella. Mm-hmm.
And with a $117 million mansion that's going on the market.
I just read that. Yeah. $117 million compound, man. That means his ass got helicopter strips and shit like that in there. Anyway, sorry.
He's got a burger restaurant. I don't even understand why, but...
Wahlburgers is in Perth, son. I'm telling you.
Oh, they got one out there?
Rockingham. They're going to put one in Rockingham.
Right.
So, we're never going to go there. But yeah, absolutely.
We are not. All right. Yeah, not obviously great choice. We obviously agree.
Yeah.
I liked this movie the first time I watched it. I think I said it was my favorite film of 2006. And then I rewatched it not that long ago and it just blew me away. Whoa, this film is amazing. It's in my top 50, 100 films somewhere in there of all time as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, me. I think that the real takeaway, the real steal the show guy is Alec Baldwin in this film. And he didn't shoot anyone. And it was
You and your Baldwin fucking hard on.
Forget that. You just missed I made an Alec Baldwin shot someone on set joke.
Sorry. All right.
It's all good. But yes, I do think though. But remember his whole scene in this is the shit. I mean, his scenes in this are the shit. And by the way, did you see the original, Stu?
I have not seen the original.
Excellent film. Worth watching
if you love this one. In terms of just to see what they changed. It's very cool.
The second one's good as well.
I gotta find it somewhere and check it out.
It's a trilogy. The second one's good as well. The third one, fucking shit.
It is a trilogy, isn't it? Yep. So Infernal Affairs.
Yeah. They pulled a Godfather.
Yeah, actually, it's a really good way of putting it. Yeah, so two, great. Just stop there. Don't bother with three. It's not worth it. Okay, so that's back to moi for my number six. This one, if you listen to the show, you knew it was coming. There's a couple of these high on my list. Dread from 2012. It's nominally directed by Pete Travis, but the scuttlebutt is that Alex Garland actually directed pretty much this whole film.
Really?
He wrote it. Obviously, it's based on the Dread 2012 AD comic. And it is a remake of the Sylvester Stallone piece of shit from 1995, I want to say.
I don't mind that one at all. I don't mind it, man. I know there's that shit, right?
Mutual podcasting buddy of ours, John, on the Pilot Comics. I was on their show to do this.
He loves it, man.
Trash or treasure it. I just spent the whole hour trashing the shit out of it. And poor John is just... you know, wildly defending left and right.
Man, that movie was gorgeous. Did you know that Gianni Versace did the fucking wardrobe?
Yeah, anyway. I did. Okay, I could tell from the fucking shoulder pads, which were out here.
Yeah, but it worked for the fact that it was a comic book movie back then, shot like that with him and his fucking, you know, like the tricycle, whatever the bike. Oh, it's good.
Terrible. It's Rob Schneider is shit. Anyway, we're not talking about that one. We're talking about 2012 one, which is just gloriously shot. It's a beautiful action film with over-the-top gore and whatever else. But Carl Urban... actually plays Judge Dredd, doesn't take his helmet off, and isn't too precious about it to do so.
Absolutely. And
Lena Headey.
Yeah.
As Mama.
Yeah. Yeah. She's
is great as this snarling bad guy. And just some of the set pieces. Watched it again not that long ago, fully intending just to put it on for 20 minutes. Well, I walked in the room. It
Sign
was
of
on.
A good film.
Watched the whole thing
Sign
again.
Sign of a good film.
Just always ropes me in. I'm very, very sad we never got a sequel. Didn't do well enough. And even though they keep talking about maybe a TV show with Carl Urban in it, I think the boys probably put paid to that now.
I think it was just so clever that they had the drug, the device.
Slow-mo.
The drug makes everything slow-mo, so they give it to you and they throw you off a fucking building so it lasts.
Amazing.
Like, what the fuck? It just looked beautiful. You're right. You're right. And nothing to do with the Raid, even though similar sort of premise.
Yeah, made around the same
very
time.
Similar.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw out here, this is my little, I'm going to advertise myself, if you don't mind, April 22nd on the Stu World Order. You may find out what I think of Dread.
Ooh, coming right up soon. I'll be definitely checking that one out.
Put it in the diary, everyone.
Getting ready to send angry messages to Stu if he does not like the film. Okay, cool. Wayne, you're number six.
Okay. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is my number six.
Nice choice.
Yeah, it's a remake of a 1967 film called Bedtime Story, and it's about Michael Caine and and Steve Martin.
Now do the rest of your mini review in that voice.
I can't, because I'll transition from young Michael Caine to old Michael Caine. You know, it's a different thing. I can't really swing it, Paul, is what I'm saying.
Oh, damn.
My Michael Caine is as good as your Christopher Walken, all right? So yeah. There, you hearing that, everyone? He's just having a stroke. There's nothing going on. Okay, but... this film is about two con men dudes who try and, like, you
my
know,
ass.
One. See, it's exactly the same.
Sorry, shut up, go.
No, but well, this is the thing about this film, right? It is about these two trying to con this one girl out of her money, and she's an innocent girl, so Michael Caine doesn't want to do it, but Steve Martin does because he's a scumball. And of course, in the end, there's a very late turn the tables on him kind of thing. But they actually at one stage stop and go, you know what? We don't think she has enough money to take her, so let's just call this off. And Steve Martin goes, well, I'll tell you what, let's make her the bet. The first one to get her into bed is the one who wins the bet. And Michael Caine's like, I'm not doing it to win. I'm just going to do it to prove that she'll never fuck a guy like you. Anyway, got a second? I had a similar sort of situation once.
Just a bit outside.
Editor's note, Wayne was entirely inappropriate here. So let's take this opportunity to cut to a promo.
Whoopa!
All right, gang, here we are for the last... in the main episode's promotion for Manscaped. Now, this is a little bit out of the ordinary. We normally have it as part of the show, but we're a little bit awkward to talk about our balls in front of Stu.
That's right. New guest, new everyone, but of course...
yeah, we didn't want Stu to have to feel like he had to talk about his balls, but we're very happy to talk about balls in front of you.
Exactly, because you're our lovely listeners, and frankly, my balls love you. So... that's what we're talking about right now.
I guess what Wayne's trying to say there is, from the bottom of his balls comes love for you.
Exactly. It's out and around and over your head, neck and chest.
And therefore, if you want to be loved by something, you want it to look good.
That's right. You keep the shit trim, you keep it neat, you keep it happy, you keep it shiny.
Smooth. Woo-hoo.
That's right. And that's why I like to use my Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0.
As part of the performance package?
Performance package, which includes ball toner, ball deodorant, fucking like
nose
hair trimmers.
Ear hair trimmer. I'll tell you what, get to our age, that shit is useful.
Damn right. I'm pretty Asian, which means there's not a lot of hair anywhere.
Lucky man.
But dude, I still get the errant hair out my hair, out my ear and shit like that, man. Okay. And the Manscaped whole package, all of their shit, which by the way has, you know, like wireless charging and a motherfucking look sweet.
Sleek look.
Anti-nick technology, ceramic blade, you name it, man.
Use it in the shower.
Water resistant. Which is the best place to do it. That's right. And now that I've been using Manscaped regularly, it's so neat down there. It's part of the shower.
Wow.
You see, part of my shower is shaving my head. Sorry. Face.
Yes.
Brushing the teeth. But now there's a ball sack component, all right? And frankly, I'm fine with it because it's so quick and easy.
Wayne's love life has never looked better.
Well, here's the thing. As I said, you don't shave anymore like I used to because then you get stubbly sort of like ass fucking hairs, okay? And then it gets a little itchy. It's not the best.
Personally, I'm so glad that you're not shaving down there anymore.
Dude,
because of sympathy pain. I'm like, I cringe every time you say that.
Dude,
But I don't cringe about the Lawnmower 4.0.
No, I even used it not 2 nights ago to actually go a bit of a town on the chest. And
whoa.
I don't want to be this guy, but I have a little stomach hair that's going on.
Oh,
and
I am the age, and being a white dude, I have hair everywhere.
Exactly.
I'm prepared to use it wherever it needs to be used.
Damn right. And that's why you, the listener, can now get 20% off the Manscaped package.
And you do that by going to themanscaped.com. Buying your Lawnmower 4.0 or the whole performance package and entering CDPC20 at checkout.
And then it just drops the balance by 20%.
Yep.
Free shipping.
And free shipping.
That's all you pay.
Really important. So with that bombshell, CDPC20, let's get back to the show proper.
Whoopah! Sorry, Paul. Okay, go ahead.
That's your 6-5 for Stu.
Oh, my number 5. I think this is where I'm going to lose the vote, and I'm perfectly fine with that. This is where I have the thing. Which
inconceivable.
Yeah.
What?
This is going to be a lot of people's number one. I get it. That's fine. My problem with the thing, so much as I have a problem with it, it's still my number 5. It's still top 5. It's a very good movie. I didn't see this movie until 2 years ago. And so when I saw it for the first time, I had already known everything that happened. I knew the end scene with Keith David and Kurt Russell. I knew the defibrillator scene. I knew the testing the blood scene. So I imagine this is a movie that if you don't know everything that's coming when it comes, it's much more impactful. But to me, it just felt like a movie that I'd seen before, except there were some scenes I couldn't recall. It's still great. I mean, I still gave it like a 4 out of 5 on Letterboxd. I still really like it. What's that?
If you dig it, even having known what was going on, that speaks volumes.
Yeah.
Like, I imagine it would have been a 5 if I would have seen it completely blind, but how do you see the thing completely blind in 2020? You just can't.
Fair enough. I think that's a reasonable explanation, and obviously 100% agree. One of the finest films ever made, one of the best practical effects ever made, displays ever put together. I think this is John Carpenter at the absolute height of his powers. Kurt Russell, arguably, is drunk through the entire film.
Is that so?
Just an amazing character, MacReady.
Really?
I love the way they don't bother with any. Let's not pad this film out by 20 minutes by making one of them female and having a love interest for MacReady. Let's just keep it bare bones. I don't think there's a wasted frame in this movie. It is as close to cinematic perfection for me, who got to see and experience all those things and has sat next to others and shown them this film just to get their reaction through some of those scenes that you described, Stu. It is a masterclass. There is only one thing I changed, some of the effects towards the very end when the last sort of thing comes out. It look a little bit rubbery and whatever. But by that stage, the practical effects supervisor, Rob Bottin, was literally in hospital having worked himself to exhaustion.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Holy shit. And do we know much about the original? Like, is this?
Yeah, it's called The Thing from Another World. I've seen it. He's like a plant monster that runs around in black and white and looks like shit.
Okay.
Like 3 people die. It's boring as fuck. It's awful.
So pretty much.
So it also is completely, like, so far ahead of its original. That's the other reason.
That's what makes it cool. When you go a different way with something and it works, and it's so, you know, that's cool. Yeah.
Based on the original short story from, I want to say like 1930s maybe, or maybe 40s, called Who Goes There?
Okay.
So, yeah.
Cool. Nice one. My number 5 is a film called No Way Out.
Oh.
Uh-huh. So this is a Kevin Costner film back in the day, people. And it was a remake of a 1948 film called The Big Clock. It's got Kevin Costner, Gene Hackman, Sean Young, Will Patton, and it's a thriller. It takes place in the Pentagon, and the Secretary of Defense is Gene Hackman, and he tries to cover up the accidental death of his mistress, Sean Young, by assigning the murder case to a young officer, Kevin Costner, who also fucked her. And so he didn't know that, though. And so the actual, it's a real cat and mousey ass. This is definitely thriller sort of kind of fucking NCIS kind of almost thriller, because like Kevin Costner is
not selling it.
Well, he's an officer, but have you even seen it? You haven't seen this?
I did a long time ago.
It's a real like wicked thriller, and all through the movie, well, I won't spoil it for you, but all through the movie they're talking about like this, there's this element of this Russian spy named Yuri, and the Kevin Costner's trying to fight against him, and there's a lot of chase scenes and all that sort of shit, and there's a mind-blowing ending where you go, oh shit, for back in the day, which I totally didn't see coming, which makes it kind of the best of this. It's really, really wicked. And yeah, No Way Out, big fan, man, big fan.
Right, okay, fair enough. Did not see that one coming, but I know you've talked about it on the show before, so you haven't seen it either, Stu.
I've definitely never seen that one.
It's definitely one of his first few. Found the Untouchables area, kind of that area.
That was your five. We skipped me, didn't we?
We skipped.
Right. Did we skip me?
Yeah, my bad.
Wayne just went.
Oh, because I talked so much about the thing.
Sorry.
It felt like we talked about my number five. My number five is actually the Brendan Fraser, Rachel Weisz vehicle, The Mummy.
Ah, now everyone talked about this.
Now this is low. This is definitely
low. Oh, okay. 999, Stephen Sommers. This film basically created Stephen Sommers' career. Obviously, there was a sequel and then a third one. I don't know if he even directed the third one. And then he made that piece of shit Van Helsing, which Wayne knows all about. That was the end of his career. But here is where his formula is perfect. Imagine taking what was meant to be a horror movie in 1932 about, you know, the mummy, and turning it into this action-adventure Indiana Jones hybrid with Brendan Fraser absolutely nailing his Indiana Jones-esque role.
Yeah, yeah.
There has to be a mirror universe. There has to be a mirror universe where in the wake of this movie, Brendan Fraser was just cast in everything for the next 30 years, right? Like, it's unfathomable to me that we let him vanish for a little bit.
You know what happened? If you ever read his story, man.
It's really sad.
He's fucked up his body from doing all of these movies, right?
Oh.
And like, has had to add heaps of, that's why he's really big and fat now and stuff like that. It's because he's been relatively immobile by comparison. And he gave his life for these movies, literally, because he just did his own stunts and just got hurt and hurt and hurt and had to add heaps of surgeries and stuff like that. I saw him, one movie did I see him in recently? Just very recently. It was a kind of biggish movie. I can't remember.
Steven Soderbergh movie.
Yeah, Steven Soderbergh film. That's
one
right.
One Something Night, or I can't
that's
remember.
That's right. Yeah, yeah. And it's actually good. It's a good film.
Well, he's definitely having a renaissance. He's in some series as well, and he's starting to get cast again, so that's really great.
Oh, yeah, cool.
He's
okay,
in Doom Patrol on HBO Max, which if you've never seen, Doom Patrol is amazing. It's three seasons in right now. Check it out. I love that show. He's typically voice acting a robot character, but every so often you see him back when he was a human and you get to see Brendan Fraser again.
Oh, okay. That's cool.
That's cool, man. Nice.
Yeah, this one, if you haven't seen The Mummy, what are you waiting for? I mean, I'm sure the effects are 1999 by now. I've got it on 4K, still haven't got around to watching it on 4K. But, man, Rachel Weisz was... She's a woman who doesn't age.
That's your fair, yeah? That's your jam?
She doesn't age.
And no, even she doesn't. I just watched Black Widow when it came out.
Yeah,
and I was talking on Pina Comics Show. We did a review on Black Widow. And I said, boy, it's amazing to me that since 1999, Rachel Weisz has aged 5 years.
Really?
Yeah.
I would absolutely concur. John Hannah. And then Kevin J. O'Connor as the sort of villainous sort of, Benny! Do you remember the back and forth?
Oh, yeah, that motherfucker with the scrub. With the fez or whatever. Yeah.
Great shit. Love this film. Check it out. The Mummy. Well, I guess Stu will tell us. Actually, tell us now, Stu. Go into it now. What is it you love about The Mummy?
Oh, I mean, it's just fantastic. You take a 1930s Universal horror movie that is frankly pretty boring, and you get this amalgam of genres where it's an action flick and it's a comedy and it's a horror and it's just got all this stuff going on. And Brendan Fraser, I describe people like this. It's if you're doing a video game and you're creating your custom character and you set the charisma to 10, that's Brendan Fraser. You've just created Brendan Fraser. Like, he's awesome to watch in these movies. He's just having so much fun and it's infectious.
I remember reading somewhere that it's like, you always know who the good guy is because he's dressed completely different to the rest of, like, the army. Because he's with the army, but for some reason he's got the Indiana Jones outfit on. And Daniel Craig's married to fucking Rachel Weisz.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, there you are.
I just thought extra tick for Wayne.
There you go, son.
All right, staying with you, Stu. You're number four.
My number four is the remake of Dawn of the Dead, which shows that if you...
Slightly low.
If you combine the powers of Zack Snyder and James Gunn... You get Zack Snyder's best movie, and you get James Gunn's, like, fourth best movie. But that's fine. But that's fine, because this movie's great, and I like that, aside from the fact that it's zombies in a mall, it has nothing to do with the 1970s Dawn of the Dead. Like, not even a little bit.
Well, they completely revamped it into an action film, in effect.
Yeah.
So, and there's so many more characters, there's so much more happening, and just the pace went from slow and glacial, but with a punch at times, to just bang, 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 barely can catch your breath.
Yeah, these are two remakes, or this is a movie and the movie that it was made from, that they're both tremendous for just different reasons.
Yes,
I watched them essentially back to back again last year, and I just love both versions. And the only thing the original Dawn of the Dead doesn't have is Phil Dunphy banging a chick from behind while he records her. I mean, that's...
Phil Dunphy's in it?
Yeah.
Phil Dunphy's in it. And he's a dick.
Yeah.
No, he's played a dick before in like... In Good Company. He's like the dick boss there. Yeah, yeah. So obviously I have no idea what you two are talking about with this film, but it sounds cool.
Yeah, it's great. I think you'd actually like this movie.
Zack Snyder? Zack Snyder? Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
A lot of his early Zack Snyderisms all present for you to see. Zack Snyder is better when he's not writing his own shit.
Absolutely. Yes,
100%.
As a shooter, he's fucking almost unparalleled because it's beautiful, the shit you watch. Okay, cool. Nice one, fellas.
Very nice choice there, Stu. My number four, here's where I had the Departed.
Departed. Yep. Okay, good to hear. My number four is, I'm sure, turning up on someone's list, True Lies.
Low.
Low, okay.
Yes, also Low.
Okay.
In case anyone doesn't know, like I did not, True Lies is a remake of a French film called La Totale.
How's it go again?
La Totale. It's La Totale. Okay. Now, look, we talk about this film a lot on the show, and suffice it to say, okay, it's Arnold Schwarzenegger, it's, what's his name, Roseanne?
Tom Arnold,
right?
Thank you.
Jamie
Lee Curtis.
Jamie Lee Curtis, Faith from Buffy.
Eliza Dushku.
Yeah, Eliza Dushku. And it is the spy thriller at the time, because I remember it came out when it came out, which was, when was it?
1994,
there you go, mate. We all went to see it. And I think that was ripe for the time where James Cameron's like, I'm going to do a spy thriller, and it's a comedy, really.
Absolutely.
Right?
There's some really, I mean, especially the first half of the film, there's some really comedic moments.
Oh, dude. But it was so cool. And just
Bill Paxton, the late,
Bill
great.
Paxton.
Yeah.
Bill Paxton doing, making that film, stealing the show.
I used to have something on the soundboard from him.
Oh, yeah? I can do stuff. I won't.
Go on. Give us your Bill Paxton impersonation.
No, I'm not doing the fucking, like, the, was it, you know, game over, man, game over.
Oh, I meant from True Lies.
Oh, from True Lies. Yeah. I've got a really little dick. It's pathetic.
That was too real.
I know. I said it a lot. What I say about this is it's a spy film, but I remember watching, when you see Arnie turning up as the spy dude, and of course, it's Arnie, and he's in his prime, okay? And he's beefcaked, and he's all tuxedoed up, and he does all this cool. I'm like, this is actually dances, what he was supposed to do.
With Tia
Carrere, right? And I'm like, this is actually perfect for him. Yes, he's Conan the Barbarian. Yes, he's the Terminator. But he's also, of course, he would make an amazing spy thriller motherfucker.
The Tango, that's right.
And it was, and Tom Arnold was actually great in this film. I mean, I think he's actually funny.
He was in this movie.
He's tremendous in this movie.
Of course, I've got a soundboard clip from this.
Oh God.
Ballsy. Stupid, but ballsy.
There you are.
See, class act like that. Still not worth a fucking sound drop. But anyway.
You're mocking me, aren't
you? You have this on your list. Tell me about it. You love it, do you not?
I do. I just think this is a perfectly balanced... Like you said, what really works about this movie is not just making a comedy, which I think the original French film was.
Oh, really?
I could be wrong on that, but it's a spy film. And then it evolves. I don't want to say devolves. It evolves into this huge action set piece with some incredible sequences. So it covers all these genres. Even the payoff in having how Jamie Lee Curtis's wife comes to know he's a spy and becomes embroiled in it. And then at the end of the film, she's now a spy as well. What a perfect payoff. It's all now family business. I think this is... I'm kind of glad they never made a sequel. I don't...
Absolutely.
I think this is perfect as it is. Just leave it. There's no need to come back to this at all. What a wonderful, wonderful film. And
you know how you know it's a good film? Jamie Lee Curtis just drops a motherfucking Uzi down some stairs, right? He goes, cut, right? And he shoots all the bad guys.
All the bad
guys. And none
guys.
Of the good guys, right? And it does that. And then she gives Arnie a look like, ooh. And he's like, what the fuck? And then you as an audience member go, sure. Because you like the movie so much, you don't care.
They're playing on that as in like, of course this can't happen. Okay. They're not just making it happen and then being okay with it. They're literally going, what?
Yeah, I guess so. But that execution, like you were sitting there going, keep going, guys. Keep going. I'm having a great time. You know what I mean? That's the good filmmaking. That's why James Cameron.
Or when Harry Tasker is caught by the bad guy. I'm going to... I'm going to take that scalpel.
Yeah.
I'm going to break these bonds. I'm going to grab you. I'm going to snap
your
neck.
Use the human shield, yeah.
He's used his shield. And then he does it all exactly.
That was so cool, man. Because he was drugged. He told the truth. He gave it away. And then he did it anyway.
Yep.
What's amazing to me about this movie is, if you look at this movie objectively, the plot devices in it are ridiculous. Like, there is so much stuff that happens in this movie that it's just, there's no way any of this would happen in real life. He just happens to be a spy whose wife doesn't know that he's a spy, who starts hanging out with a guy that tells her that not only is he a spy, but he's taking credit for the stuff that she doesn't know her husband is doing.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's so ridiculous, but the movie is just so much fun, you don't care.
Exactly. And then, you know, when he's doing the thing where he's playing the recording of the dude saying, take off your clothes and this and that, right? And it's like,
Do some more.
Yeah, do some more. And I'm like,
slow.
What kind of wicked technology do you have where she can't tell it's a fucking tape recorder? Yeah. It's not tinny at all.
It's the same
voice.
Technology from where they make microphones in movies where podcasting is portrayed.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. You can just walk around the room and the guy still can hear everything. Yep. So, yeah.
You can stand 30 feet away and just point a mic at them. No worries.
Yes. True Lies, everyone. True Lies.
Stu, anything else you want to say about it? Given it's also on your list.
Oh, it's just fantastic. Like you said, it's got all those elements, what I said about The Mummy, where it just combines being a spy thriller with an action movie and comedic elements. I love it. I think Arnold Schwarzenegger doing funny performances is so much better than it has any right to be. Like this, Kindergarten Cop, Twins, Last Action Hero. I mean, he's fantastic at this.
Oh, he's the man. He's the man, straight up. We love Arnie.
Great stuff. All right, that's my... No, you said Back to Stu.
Back to Stu.
For number three.
All right, so my number three may cause consternation, but if it does, everyone's wrong, and I'll be okay with that.
Welcome to my world.
My number three is a remake, Evil Dead 2. Definitely a remake of Evil Dead, no matter what people say.
Paul, set it up, son. Go ahead. Tell us about Evil Dead 2, Stu. Well,
go on, Stu. Talk us through it.
It's definitely a remake of The Evil Dead. You watch The Evil Dead, and then you watch The Evil Dead 2, and Ash and his girlfriend Linda go to a cabin and find the book for the first time. It's just that with Evil Dead 2, you can tell they rewatched The Evil Dead. They saw all these comedic elements that they didn't necessarily lean into and just thought like, fuck it. We're just going crazy with this movie. We're just going apeshit. It's going to be great. And
I just realized what you're doing.
Halfway through the movie, you get who Ash becomes for like the rest of time. Like, because when you think of Ash, you don't think of the scared guy in the cabin. You think of Groovy and the chainsaw in his hand. And halfway through this movie, you get that development. And it's like, yep, this is what I've always wanted and didn't know that I wanted.
I have an interest. Like, I didn't know. I thought you were talking about a remake of The Evil Dead 2 that I know. When you're saying Evil Dead 2 is a remake of Evil Dead 1.
Is a remake of Evil Dead.
Or Evil Dead, right?
Yes.
Now, I remember talking to Paul about this because Paul made me watch this. Oh, sorry, Paul introduced me to this when we were kids, all right? And he's like, yo, you gotta watch this film, and then Groovy, and all that sort of shit. And I thought it was cool at the time. I absolutely did, right? So,
nice.
And then years later, I'm like, wait, Evil Dead 1, what happened to that? And Paul said, Evil Dead 2 doesn't really have any shit to do with Evil Dead 1. It's the same characters and shit, but it's just they're in a different situation.
It's one
and
same
it's all,
character.
Well, it's just Ash.
I can't remember if Linda is called Linda in the first one.
She's called Linda in the first one, but it might be a different actress.
Well, that is definitely a different actress.
Yeah. So that freaks me out. Back then, in that day, they're like, yeah, let's reboot it before rebooting was even a thing. And they just said, let's just do another one. And it's like this one, but it's not. And then no one had a problem with it.
Yeah,
Paul even loves it.
This is totally controversial. And I'll let the listeners decide, Stu.
So, Paul, you're saying it's not a remake.
Look, what they do is they effectively, in the first 5 minutes, not even five, maybe 3 minutes of the film, they simplify the first film and just retell it. Right, in 3 minutes. And then it's just completely own beast after that.
Which would make it a sequel.
I don't know, see?
Well, here's the thing, though, Paul.
It doesn't depend on the first movie. Like, the characters aren't going through the same thing.
Hang on. In the first movie, I don't know what
Ash does, but in a much more limited version.
But if they recap the first movie...
five characters go to the cabin in Evil Dead.
Yep.
And the very end scene is Ash being hit by the evil and as if he's dead. The last shot of the film.
So they summarize that.
Evil Dead 2... Yeah. It's just Ash and Linda, his girlfriend, just going to the cabin themselves. And within 3 to 5 minutes, Linda's dead and Ash gets hit by the evil at the end of the day after he's buried her and seen her come out of the ground and dance with her head rolling across her shoulders and shit like that. So they've just redone that. So yeah, I'll leave it open to people to interpret. It's not on my list.
That's actually, it is controversial because that, if they acknowledge it, in theory it's a sequel, but then if they rewrite it, it's a remake. This is weird.
Very hard.
I think you're confusing, Wayne, because in the first movie there's five people that go to the cabin. In the second movie they're remaking the first movie, but like you said, they remake the first movie in 5 to 10 minutes and then just go on with another. So it's an entirely new thing, just with him and his girlfriend instead of the five people. They just remake it and then, you know, chainsaws.
Then that's what it is. It is a remake with the same actor in the same character.
But then then from there, the majority of the film is effectively a sequel. So
yes, they develop upon it. But if they're rewriting the first one, it can be considered a remake, just one with the same actor in the same character.
I don't think we can sort this out here. Stu has presented his argument. I said, we'll let the listeners decide.
I can't wait to hear what they say.
Genius, or if this is foul ball.
Brilliant. This is exactly the type of entry we need on a show like this, my friend.
Awesome.
Nice work.
All right, my number three is Dawn of the Dead. So we're going straight around, Wayne, to you.
Heat! My number three is Heat, which is a remake of LA Takedown, which is a piece of shit, in case
you haven't seen it. Which is a TV film. So yeah,
right, TV film. But Michael Mann got, this is the odd thing, he actually got to remake a movie that he released, which he wasn't happy with, and then it became this thing. And it's, I mean, I think everyone listening to this show knows what Heat is about, but it's Al Pacino. Hoo-ah! Actually, no, what did he do on this one? She got a great ass! And you got your head all the way up it! Okay, so now if...
That's what he did. Sorry for your eardrums, listeners.
Sorry about everyone, yeah. So we have that, you know, Al Pacino, Bobby De Niro. This was their, oh my God, they're doing a film together again. And one is the bad guy and one is the cop. And there's Val Kilmer in it and shit like that. And of course, everyone knows about this machine gun fight that happens on the middle of a street kind of shit. Electrifying, wicked, awesome. Tom Sizemore even was great.
Shout out to Tom Sizemore.
I was going to say, actually, take that, Tom Sizemore.
He is usually good. He's just a bit of a...
No, he was good back in the day, and then he got very heavily into drugs, and he disappeared off the radar. Yeah, and now he pops up as a really fat dude doing him and Michael Madsen competing for who can be worse in low-budget films.
Michael Madsen wins. So... But yes, I absolutely adore this film. And in fact, I think it made me respect the cop show more. Like, I've never seen one that works this well in terms of that, because it's so serious and it's so like hard hitting that everything about it was great. Even Al Pacino's overacting worked fine. So there you are.
Good film, good choice. I wouldn't have been authentic had I stuck it on my list. I saw it and thought that should be on the list, but I've only watched it once. I still haven't got around to rewatching it. So,
oh really?
I was doing research for this list, it came up and I just didn't get around to watching it in the last few weeks. I wanted to watch it to see if I could fit it on there, but I didn't get around to it. Again, it's like 2 hours and 50 minutes. Who has that?
Yeah. Welcome to like doing this show. You're sitting there, should I waste some time watching this whole movie again to see if I can get an opinion on it? And what if I don't get to talk about it? Damn, I wasted some time. It's a tough juggling act.
Yeah. And a little bit of a shout out to our plug to our review this week. Ambulance has some very strong Heat vibes, particularly early in the film.
I can't wait for that review. All right, keep going. That's my number three, everyone.
Yep.
Yeah, all right. So number two then, Stu.
My number two, this is where I had The Mummy.
Very nice. My number two is where I had True Lies.
And my number two is where I had The Departed.
Okay, well, let's recap the list, Stu, and then reveal your number one.
All right, so my number 10, I had The Ring. At number 9, The Birdcage. At number 8, It Chapter 1. For my number 7, Fright Night. For number 6, The Departed. At 5, what's going to cost me the list? I have The Thing. It's fine. I'll allow it.
That's fine, man. That's fine.
It's not even on Wayne's list. <That's fine.
laughs> Number 4, I had Dawn of the Dead. Number 3, Evil Dead 2. Screw you. It's a remake. Accept it. Number 2, Brendan Fraser's The Mummy. And anticlimactic, we already talked about it. Number 1 is where I had True Lies.
That's it's all going to be like this from now on, so just be advised.
All right, my 10 through 2, It Chapter 1 at 10, 9, The Magnificent 7, not Antoine Fuqua, disappointingly for Wayne's version. Number 8, The Blob, 1988, Casino Royale at, of course, number 7. Number 6, Dread, 5, The Mummy, 4, The Departed, 3, Dawn of the Dead. Number 2, True Lies, and my number 1 is, of course, I'm sorry, you all knew it was going to be The Thing.
Of course it was. Let's just get through mine. Number 10, The Nutty Professor. See, totally different. 9, The Thomas Crown Affair. 8, Ocean's 11. 7, The Italian Job. What up? 6, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. 5, No Way Out. 4, True Lies. 3, Heat. 2, Casino. Sorry. 2, The Departed. And my number 1 is Casino Royale. Okay.
Speaking of anticlimactic.
Yeah, sorry. Fucking
looking
right
at Wayne's list here. Scrolling down, looking at his list. none of the fucking titles are in the same font. They're all over the fucking place. Yeah, no wonder you get confused, you dickhead.
It's right click and then you use the different A on the word.
Whatever you feel like at the time. This is big. I'm putting this one in big letters. This one, the plot is in little
I knew that would offend Paul, and I'm kind of glad you looked at my list, my notes now.
Mine is all chicken scratch handwriting, so don't feel
see,
bad.
See, that's actually old school and fly. If you can be in like a cafe somewhere writing it on a notebook. You know what I'm saying? It's cool.
All right, look, we won't talk about them because we are running a bit long. Let's just run down any honorable mentions you want to say that didn't quite make your list, Stu.
Mine would be Cape Fear, Let Me In, and The Wizard of Oz.
Nice. Bob. I had Coda, this year's Best Picture winner.
Remake?
Well worth a look. It's a remake of a French film. The Longest Yard. I don't care. I like that movie.
Wait, the fucking Adam Sandler one? Adam Sandler. Suck my dick,
yeah,
really?
I like that movie. Yep. 12 Monkeys, Dune. It's a remake.
Yeah.
Part one. The Ring, as Stu mentioned. Piranha 3D. The Crazies, I think, is a pretty good remake of the George Romero film. And Assault on Precinct 13, I quite like too.
Okay, a couple over here that haven't been mentioned, because you wouldn't. Down and Out in Beverly Hills, I like that show. Flatliners, the 80s one, was actually a remake.
The 80s one's a remake, or the newer one's
apparently
a remake?
Apparently.
Okay.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I could be probably wrong.
How wrong is Wayne? Let us know.
The Invisible Man, I quite liked.
Yeah.
And I also liked Friedman and a Baby. Fuck y'all.
Okay.
All right. So.
Fair enough. All right. Well, that's our list. What about yours? We wrap up every episode of the show with your feedback on the topic at hand in the segment that we call the Pop 10.
Talk about.
Pop 10.
Talk about.
Pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with Tony Dobbish, who said, ignoring your art choice, i.e. The Thing, an obvious number one, I'll go Ocean's 11.
You.
The Fly, which no one mentioned, and Casino Royale. Does that count? Yes, we all agree.
Word.
B Dizzle, Billy Dunham from the We Watch the Thing podcast, is going to be on next week's show. So, guests a couple weeks in a row. Number three, Dawn of the Dead. Number two, The Thing. And number one, The Departed. I'll stop doing like that. Sorry.
I think it's fine.
Number three, Charles Gretsch said the third person. Charles Gretsch said number three, The Fly. Number two, Cape Fear. So, there's that honorable mention for you, Stu. And The Thing again at number one.
Damn.
And he even said, I know The Thing's talked about all the time on the show, but it's one of the greatest movies of all time. It would be a crime to leave it off your list, Wayne.
I've heard that is the case. But, you know, some of us like to go wild on the stick.
David Power, top level patron to the show, said, Ocean's 11 at 3-2, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. The original is very good, but Kaufman's remake is one of the best horror sci-fi films ever made. Yeah, okay, I haven't seen one in a long time, but nice. And number one, The Mummy. Easily the biggest improvement over its predecessor of anything on this list.
I just caught a glimpse of how much I'm going to lose this week.
That's huge. I think we might both be able to lose. Depends how people feel about Evil Dead 2, I guess. Chris Yenny, another patron of the show, said Mancurian Candidate.
Really? The Denzel and
fucking
Liv Schreiber?
Well, everyone else likes Clooney instead of old Blue Eyes. I'll say Denzel.
Wow, I wasn't a huge fan of that one, but an interesting choice. Go ahead.
Bruce's Millions. We'll never again have anyone come close to Pryor.
That was
the
shit.
I never
knew
that was a remake.
Neither did I.
Neither did I, to be honest. And of course, The Departed at number one. Just fucking perfect, says Chris. Andrew Watson says, I restrict myself to ones where I've seen original and remake. Otherwise, Father the Bride might get on here.
I took Paul to see that when we were kids. And he shot me fucking sideways looks the whole movie. I thought it was great, by the way. I thought it was great.
Miracle on 34th Street at number three. Number two, The Italian Job, Wayne.
What up, dog?
And number one, Dawn of the Dead. Oh, but Andrew added.
What? What?
If Wayne picks Nutty Professor, I'm going to lose my shit.
I didn't see that comment, and now I'm so happy I picked it.
Stuart, I look forward to your vote then, Andrew. John Amenta, aforementioned for Pilot Comics, said, Dawn of the Dead, Snyder should have stopped directing right there. Great retelling while still being its own thing. True Grit, first mention thereof. Great cast, great moments, a rare, great modern Western. And of course, number one, The Thing. Let's be real, the hype is earned. Easily in my top 10 films ever and a frequent rewatch. Couldn't agree more, John.
Nice.
Lee Allen Thomas said The Departed, Secret Life of Walter Mitty, and Heat.
You know, Secret Life, I expected that to be so good because I saw it late. Yeah, it wasn't for me, but interesting. Okay, go ahead.
Mike Margosi, another patron of the show. Thank you for your support, sir. The Departed again, number three. Number two, A Star is Born. Did not specify which version, though.
Tell me something, Paul. Sorry.
Number one, Vanilla Sky, remake from Spanish Abre Tuerz. Oh, yes.
Beautiful.
Open Your Eyes in Spanish. What was awesome was Penelope Cruz was in both but played a different lead character in each.
Whatever. The fucking Open Your Eyes. Yeah, you're right.
Yep. I was surprised. I thought maybe that might make
you like Vanilla Sky. I thought about it. I do really, really great like that film.
Joey DiCarlo from the So Wizard podcast. Obviously, The Thing is number one. So, Dawn of the Dead, Invaders from Mars from 1986, and The Blob is his number one. Yes, Joey.
Boom.
And last one here to wrap it up from John Huslander. Paul Wayne isn't going to have the thing on his list, and damn near everyone else will.
Damn, this motherfucker's like a... Were you a witch? You got a crystal ball? Shit.
So aside from the thing I'll go with, number three, Cape Fear. Just mentioning it, I can hear that blaring soundtrack in my head. Number two, more Scorsese, I should say. The Departed, one of these movies that someone like Marky Mark can shine in. And number one, The Magnificent Seven. Antoine Fuqua from the cast to the music, just awesome.
Fuck!
No, didn't say Antoine Fuqua.
Thank you. Don't paint them with that brush, my friend. Jesus.
Any opportunity. So that is it for today's show. Stu, how do the listeners, thank you so much, first of all, I should say, for coming
thank
on
you.
On your Friday night late now. How do listeners find your show and how can they get on board?
First of all, obviously, thanks for having me. Love listening to you guys. Paul, you've been on the show. That was great fun. Got to get Wayne on someday. We'll get Wayne out of there.
I'll swing by. Absolutely.
All right. So we have a website, swoproductions.com, where we have articles every weekday, pop culture stuff. I have Pop-Tart Quest, where I try different Pop-Tarts and tell you how good they are. And on Twitter, we are at swoproductions, and the podcast is called Stu World Order.
Stu World Order. Nice.
There we are. You can find our stuff, Wayne, where?
You can Google us and you'll find all of our socials, or you can send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
Jesus, you are shit. There's a website, thecountdownpodcast.com.
Well, I didn't work on it yet. I didn't know I was going to throw it out there, but okay, yes. Sorry, cunt.
Yeah, Facebook, this community links there. Links to everything. The patrons there.
Patrons? Yeah. Merch? You can get merch countdown
all
merch.
On the website, which Wayne refuses to fucking remember or mention. So,
Wayne hates
hooray.
The website.
No, I'm just bad at it.
Now, as I mentioned, B Dizzle's on next week for episode 368. We have to agree on a topic. He sent us a list. We'll do that off mic and let you all know during the week. So
Word. That's
it. We are done for today. Thanks again so much to Stu for coming on.
My man.
And that's it. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
My name is Stu.
Seamless. And this has been The Soundboard.
This makes complete sense to
eat
me.
My balls.
Not having the thing on the list. We'll catch you next time. See ya.